Welcome to New York Game Day. Now here's Mike Tannenbaum, Matthias Kiwanuka, and Anita Marks.
It is New York Game Day, week three of the NFL season. We're with you for the next 3 hours. Talking about, of course, the Giants and the Jets getting ready for their opponents. And Matthias Kiwanuka, giant great defensive lineman, won a Super Bowl with the Giants. Of course, we all know, joining us here, part of our New York Game Day team this season. And Kiwi, you're in town, man. Welcome back.
Good morning. Yeah, it feels good. It's great to be back in the city. How you
I'm
doing?
Sure. Yeah. I'm sure. I'm great. And an exciting day, of course, for Eli Manning. And deservingly so, his number being retired and, of course, going up into the Giants Hall of Fame. Why don't we start right there, right? Because, you know, we've got 3 hours to really dive into this matchup and dive into this game. But really, it is a special day for Eli Manning. And of course, you played for him. You played with him, I should say. And you know him better than most. So talk about, the fact that you came into town for this is really special. Give us some insight. Like, talk about what Eli Manning has meant to you and for your career and what it was like to have him as a teammate.
Yeah, I mean, it was important for me to come back and to support. I was hoping I would have gotten in a little earlier. You know, United rebooked me on a later flight, so I missed the get-together last night. But I did get a chance to see the Slime Green Bears, my son's flag football team, won. And Boston College is off to a 4-0 start, so I flew in in good spirits, ready for the weekend. But, you know, getting into a guy like Eli Manning, I think in my experience playing with him, he was just a very solid player, a solid man. I mean, he had a lot of the weight of the world on his shoulders, you know, coming up with that name and then playing in New York and then the way he got to New York and having, you know, the comparisons to his brother. I thought, you know, throughout his career, he handled it extremely well. And, you know, we know about the two Super Bowls and we look back and we think about like the great times and the great energy and wins and victories that he brought to New York City. But there were some years in there, you know, when I first got here, the word on the street is when are you guys getting rid of Eli? We got to get him out of here. Like, he's this and that. And, you know, I was young and I didn't understand it. I had heard about the New York media market and how much of a beast it was. But, you know, looking back on it, he took that, you know, he took it with grace. And there were other times during his career where there were, you know, similar grunts and groans and stuff like that. And no matter what was going on media wise, no matter what was going on, even on the field, on the defensive side of the ball, we knew what we were going to get out of him week in and week out. And we knew that there was going to be that, you know, that shoulder shrug or that smirk or whatever it is. And all we had to do was wait, just get him close. That's what they used to say. Just get him, keep it close. You know, let him get in the 2-minute offense. You know, we know about the fourth quarter comebacks numbers that he's put up and how many times he's let our team down the field. You don't do that without, you know, poise and grace and, you know, intelligence and attention to detail and just a focus and a love of, you know, of preparation for the game that's pretty much second to none. So I have the utmost respect for him. I always knew playing with him that, you know, he was going to come, he was going to be prepared, he was going to practice, he was going to be quiet, he was going to be methodical, but at the same time, he was going to give us what we needed.
You know, Kiwi, one of the biggest criticisms when it comes to Eli Manning is, you know, lack of emotion. Mm-hmm. During you know, it's interesting. You know me, I play a lot of golf and, you know, when I'm out there and I'm playing with dudes who, you know, after we make the first turn, typically that's when you ask somebody, so what do you do? and I say, well, you know, I'm in broadcasting. I used to work for the Giants. Oh my gosh. What's Eli Manning really like? Mm-hmm. Like if I had a dollar for every time when I tell somebody like, oh, I worked for the Giants and they ask me, well, what was Eli Manning really like? My first response is, with all due respect, like, mm-hmm. he's a kidster. Like, mm-hmm. he's a jokester. He likes to prank people. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, he's very lighthearted. Like, he's funny. And I'm sure you have a ton of story regard to like how Eli Manning was just the biggest, you know, prankster on the team and is really funny and really clever and, you know, but it's interesting, you know,
you can't image is
everything.
You can't show yourself completely to everybody at all times. You know, like he kept it to himself, and I feel like on the field he didn't necessarily like show all of his emotions. But I got a story. Like I know, you know, he is a competitor. He's definitely got that fire in it. You don't make it that far without it. And personal story I have there. We were in training camp 1 year. And this is like, you know, towards the end of my career, I think. And we were down because we were down here at the hotel across the street. So we weren't up in Albany. We were down here, but we still were, you know, kept in the hotel. And we, you know, we still had to go back and forth to the stadium from there. And towards the end of camp, we're playing a game, can jam, two people on each side. It's like, you know, you throw a frisbee into a trash can, you get a certain amount of points if it goes mm-hmm. in. And so there was you know, you can throw the frisbee. And you can tap it. Your partner's on the other side. You can tap it in, or if it goes in, you get a different, you know, level of points, right? So somebody on my team throws a frisbee. I thought he tapped it in. And he said he didn't tap it in. And he was – this is just a simple game of can jam at like 11 o'clock at night, you know, before one of the last days of practice. And he refused to let it go, you know, like he was really like adamant about the fact, you know. And at one point we're standing like real close to each other, and I thought to myself, like, is he gonna swing on me over a, you know, can jam? I was like, am I gonna be the only New York Giant to ever get in a physical altercation with Eli Manning? Like, is this how it's gonna go down? Like, but you know, but like that's the type of competitor he really is deep down in his heart. But I think, like, you know, whatever's been instilled in him is this ability to control his emotions, you know, this ability to keep that same poise and that same demeanor, you know, throughout whatever's coming his way, you know. So when we're out there on the field, you know, he feels it. He feels it. And you can tell by the way that he's speaking and the things that he, you know, is focused on. But he's not going to give it to everybody. He's not going to let you believe or understand if you're getting inside of his head. Like, you know, that was part of the way that he played, in my opinion. I thought it worked out for him beautifully.
Yeah, it's just it is very interesting, because I think the Eli Manning that fans saw on the field wasn't necessarily the Eli Manning that we knew at the facility, and you mm-hmm. certainly knew inside your locker room. And what I love is, have you been watching the Eli Manning, Peyton Manning Monday night?
I've been watching a little bit. I've been flipping back and forth. And what I said was, I love the fact that people are now getting to see, you know, a little bit of his personality, getting to see a little bit of who he is. Because, you know, for a long time, like, we've all done it. You know, when you get up there in front of the media and they're asking you questions and you just, yeah, well, you know, we're going to go out there and play hard. They're a really good team and we got our work cut out for us and this and that. You know, but in the back of your mind, you know, like, man, F these guys, you know, like, whatever, like, you know. So it's good to see that, you know, he's got a platform where he can let loose a little bit and people can get to know him, because he's a fun guy. You know, he's a great, you know, human being, a good man, good father, and he's a fun person to be around. And I think, you know, that's part of it. You know, like, your relationship with your teammates, you know, especially in a prominent position like middle linebacker or like quarterback, you know, it's very important. You know, like do guys want to be around you? Like, are they going to spend extra time, or are you the type of guy who's like, you know, grunting and groaning all the time and like, you know, rubbing people the wrong way, and they're just, you know, they'll listen to you, but they just can't wait to get away from you? No, like, guys enjoyed hanging around him. You know, like, he was funny. He was going to crack some jokes. He was going to, you know, like you said, like, do some pranks. The O-line used to prank him back, and he would take it, you know. But I thought that was part of what built our chemistry in New York, you know, as a team, was having leaders that stayed in the building and wanted to stay around other players, and you know, everybody kind of, you know, gravitated towards the people who were doing the right things.
Again, Mathias Kiwanuka, Anita Marks, talking all things Eli Manning. It's a really, really big day. If you're heading out to the stadium, what a special day this is going to be to really, you know, celebrate Eli Manning's career with the Giants. 800-919-3776. Mathias, when we get back, let's start breaking down the game. And I want you to marinate. This is what I said. I know we're three shows in. You haven't heard me say this yet, but I want you to marinate in this as we go to a break, okay?
All right, let's go.
So you know me, all week I'm prepping and planning for all the games.
You're busy. I'm following your Twitter. You are.
I'm busy. But everyone that I've spoken to, whether it's coach, scout, player, analyst, beat reporter, who I talk to from Atlanta, says, let me tell you this. If the Falcons can't beat the Giants, well, then just pack up everything and let's just call it a season. 'Cause,
oof.
And then vice versa, though, mm-hmm. Kiwi. Everyone that I've spoken to, same thing about the Giants, say to me, look, if the Giants can't beat the Falcons, mm-hmm. then let's just shut it down. And like, I mean, come on. If you can't beat the Falcons. So like both teams and respectfully, coaches, scouts, players, analysts, reporters are saying the same thing about each other's opponents. Marinating that when we get back, because I don't know right, what to make
got,
of this
I got,
game.
I got something to say about that. And the timing.
Good. We'll I just because I just I'm staying away from this game. Atlanta's getting three and a half in some places. I'm playing the over in a lot of like over rushing yards for Danny, over rushing and passing, over receptions for Sterling Shepard. That's how I'm playing this in prop bets. I'm staying away from it. I don't know. Maybe you could convince me otherwise.
New York Game Day with Mike Tannenbaum, Matthias Kiwanuka, and Anita Marks.
Anita Marks, Matthias Kiwanuka, brought to you by Nissan. Nissan's an easier choice than ever with their exciting and full efficient lineup. Now get great offers across their full line. Shop at your local Nissan store and NissanUSA.com. All right, Kiwi, let's dive into this game. I told you to marinate in what I was hearing on both sides. Let's start with the Giants, okay?
It's a sad state of affairs when people are saying if we can't beat the Giants that, you know, we should pack it in. I heard you say that earlier today. Like,
right?
It hurts, you know, as a former Giants player, and you know, I'm still a Giants fan. Like that's something that hurts. What I was marinating on when you made that comment was that I think a lot of it has to do with the timing, you know, where we are in the season. You know, when I played, so Coughlin used to break the season down into quarters. Now, obviously, there's 17 games now, but you know, like, you know, 16 games. In the beginning, you know, week one and two, when we're talking, it's like, oh, you can't overreact. You know, it's just one. You don't have a big enough sample size to say this is what this team is yet. When you get closer to four games, that first quarter of the season, you're starting to show who you are. Like, there's enough data there to say, oh, well, this team does not play the run well. This team does not do this well. And coordinators are paying attention to it. And, you know, defenses or individuals are paying attention to, oh, this guy gets beat on this specific pass rush or this guy. So the good teams are going to start to separate themselves this week and the next. And, you know, there's never a time to panic per se in the NFL, but there's a time to get your, you know, get your stuff together and get out there and get a win. And that's how I feel about this week. You know, it's just time to win. It doesn't matter how it looks. It doesn't matter who's out there on the field. You know, everybody's hurt. Everybody's beat up at this point. You know, guys who are, you know, who started the season injured are now being pressured to come back and play. So you're seeing a lot of guys back out there on the field because they don't want to be put on IR. So you've got your full, you've got what is going to be your full stable. There's no more time or there's no more room for, oh, well, when this happens or we need to try this or against that. No, like, you've got divisional games under your belt. It's just time to win.
All that sounds great. on the offense, okay, so let's break it down. Obviously, both sides of the ball for the Giants. Okay, so offensively, expectation he gets Ingram back today. Mm-hmm. We saw Saquon Barkley get ramped up. Week one, 42% usage. Week two, 82% usage in regard to offensive snaps. I think this is where they really unleash him against a very porous Atlanta Falcons defense, let alone rushing defense.
When you say unleash him, you think they were holding him back up until now?
Well, I mean, I think we see 82%. I think maybe we see him play 90%, 92% of the offensive snaps this week. You know, how does he run behind that offensive line? It's obviously their weakest link on the offensive side of the ball. But on top of that, we see the chemistry with Sterling Shepard. You've got Slayton, Galladay is expected to play. Like, here's the thing. Danny's got all hands on deck this week against a really bad Atlanta defense, let alone their secondary. I talked about it during the fantasy show. A.J. Terrell is out, so A.J. Green is going to play safety. Now he's going to have to step up and play the corner. I don't know, does he take Slayton? Does he take Galladay? Regardless, really, there's an opportunity here that Danny could pass for over 350 yards and three touchdowns today, especially with all these weapons. at his disposal. Like, you know, what are you thinking game script offensively for the Giants?
I believe in that. I think he's going to put up some big numbers in the air. I believe Galladay is going to come back. You know, he had the outburst and whatnot on the sidelines. I feel like, you know, like that kind of stuff, you know, it has to happen. You know, we don't usually see it always. It's not always like broadcast, but it does happen on the sidelines. So hopefully, you know, he takes that and uses that as you know, some fuel for him to go out there and play a little better. I thought, you know, Daniel Jones showed that he can get the ball down the field. Like, if you give him time and we establish a run game, like, he's got the ability to get the ball down the field. He's been protecting the football when he's running it, but he's not afraid of contact. So against a underperforming defense, I do believe that, you know, there's going to be some big numbers put up by Daniel Jones this week. And I do believe that it will come out with the win. The wild card also, you know, Matt Ryan, BC guy, you know, veteran guy. I mean, what, 14 years in the league. You can't underestimate experience. He's been there before. He's poised. You know, if he can, if he goes off, then we're going to have a long day. But I do believe that, you know, the Giants, Daniel Jones specifically, will have a very good day out there.
Okay, so now on the opposite side, with the Giants, and I'm curious, what do you feel is going on with them defensively? They can't really get the pressure that they did last year. I know they're missing some guys that are no longer on that front seven. Bradberry has not been great. Last year he was sensational. Blake Martinez was one of my favorite players, linebackers, last year. I felt that he was a really important part of that defense. He hasn't been playing extremely well. You know, this is a defense that is performing below expectation, at least for me, and going up against, as you said, Matt Ryan. Don't forget, they've got Kyle Pitts. They've been utilizing Cordarrelle Patterson in a very unique way. They've got Calvin Ridley, excellent wide receiver. So what are your thoughts on the Giants' defense and what you think they could do against Atlanta today, Kiwi?
That was one of my main concerns is Kyle Pitts, you know, putting a stress on the linebackers going across the middle of the field. You know, we've been rushing four and haven't been very successful getting to the quarterback. So, you know, I'm expecting to see some more blitzes. You know, this is a time in the season where it's like, okay, if this isn't working, you know, let's send some extra men. You know, let's try to get to the quarterback. And so I'm expecting to see some more blitzes. If we don't get home, then, you know, that's going to be the problem because the middle of the field is going to be exposed. So, but some on the defensive side of the ball, like, somebody's got to separate themselves, you know. Like, you know, we talk about you know, individual players and matchups and whatnot, but I believe strongly in, like, the culture of the team. Like, we're dealing with two teams who have both lost their confidence. Like, there's not an expectation going into the game that we are going to win, and this is why. I think it's an expectation of, well, you know, we want to win this game. You know, how are we going to do it? You know, when you're playing on a good team with great players and, you know, and you're playing with leads and you've got some wins under your belt, like, you go into the game plan is like, hey, this is how we're going to win the game. It doesn't seem like either of these teams are playing, you know, with that mentality. It's kind of like, okay, well, we got to do this, we got to do that, and if we do this, then we'll win. Nah, man, like just go out there, execute the game plan, be confident in the game plan, and make sure that everybody does their job, you know. And so I think on the defensive side, I'm just looking for an individual player to separate themselves, stand up, have a voice, and take over this team and start getting some wins in the column.
New York Game Day with Mike Tannenbaum, Matthias Kiwanuka, and Anita Marks.
And joining us now is Rich Cimini. Let's talk about the Jets. Another difficult matchup as they have to head to Mile High to take on the Denver Broncos. Rich, welcome in. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, I always. I love having you on. First and foremost, before we start really breaking down this game, you know, I don't think enough is being discussed in regard to how difficult it is to play at Mile High in September. And you and I, we talked about it in the preseason, you know, not just the Jets, but a number of teams. Like, you know, these guys aren't NFL ready. A lot of them didn't even play in the preseason. And now you have to go to Mile High and play at an altitude that a lot of these guys are going to be like just grasping for oxygen there. You know, it's such a huge disadvantage for teams, especially in Denver in September. Agree or disagree?
I agree. In fact, that's why the Jets left on Friday. They wanted to get the players out there a day early to get them acclimated a little bit. It's funny you mention that because someone asked Zach Wilson the other day. Of course, he's from Utah and played at BYU, and so he's used to playing at elevation. And someone asked him about being acclimated, and he said it's not really a huge deal, but when he went home and then came back to New Jersey, he could definitely sense the difference in when he went back and forth. So he never really felt it when he was out there because that's what he played in all the time. But yes, I think it is somewhat of a factor on Sunday.
Especially with that Jets pass defense against Teddy Bridgewater and just how great that he's been playing. But you mentioned Zach Wilson. Let's talk about him. I mean, listen, I always like to say you've got your finger on the pulse of the team better than most. And coming off of a really disappointing game last week, all those interceptions as a rookie, you could just see he was just trying to do too much. You know, he's trying to will a way to win. And it backfired on him. You know, how has he been able to rebound from that and get mentally right for this matchup?
Well, we're going to find out today. I mean, he said all the right things during the week. You know, everyone around the team said the right things. You know, he said he's super anxious to get back on the field. You know, of course, the line that is getting the most traction all week was Robert Saleh saying that, you know, they want him to play boring at times. And to me, that's a tough ask because one of the reasons why they drafted him was because his ability to make off-schedule plays, he was so dynamic at BYU. And so that's why you drafted him. And that's a gunslinger mentality. And, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it backfires. And so I think you just have to let him be him and don't try to harness him that much. So I'm sure he's got a million things rolling around in his brain right now on what to do and what not to do. And it is going to be a tough atmosphere. It's a loud crowd. It's their home opener. So it's going to be loud.
You know, you make an excellent point, right? You're asking him to play a style of quarterback that he's not used to playing number one. And let's be honest, Rich, like not have the weapons around him to be able to execute a dink and dunk boring style of offense, right? I mean, you know, typically playing from behind, constantly getting pressured, running game non-existent. Like it's kind of unfair to ask him to play that style of quarterback when he doesn't have the horses in his offensive stable to be able to execute.
Well, he's the most pressured quarterback in the league right now after mm-hmm. 2 weeks. So that's something you don't want to be leading the league in. And they did run the ball better though against the Patriots. So I think they're hoping to build on that. His only chance, well, there's two things that are key for Zach Wilson against Denver. One, they have to be able to run the ball. They just have to stay out of obvious passing downs because they don't want him just dropping back in the pocket. Number two, they got to get Corey Davis involved. I mean, we saw last week against New England what happens to their offense when Corey Davis is neutralized. They have to develop, they either have to get him very involved from the get-go, or they have to develop a number two option. Now, Elijah Moore is supposed to be that number two option, but, you know, he's been inconsistent so far. He's a rookie. You know, you can't expect him to do too much out of the gate. So those are two big things that have to go Zach Wilson's way. You know, run the ball and get Davis involved.
Again, Rich Cimini joining us here on New York Game Day, 98.7 ESPN. You know, my heart goes out to Zach. He goes from a Bill Belichick kind of, as we like to call it, right? Like Bill Belichick's record against rookies and how he's able to engineer. We know that his son is the defensive coordinator there. And then now he goes to a Vic Fangio where Fangio is just as creative, is going to put together some really exotic blitz packages that, let's be honest, unfortunately, as you said, from BYU, Zach's really not going to know what's coming. And so a part of me, I'm worried about it. I wouldn't be shocked if he has another performance like we saw last week.
Yeah. Fangio and Belichick might be the two best defensive coaches in the league, you know, even over the last couple of decades. I mean, Fangio does it differently though. Like, you know, last week they saw a lot of man coverage with the Patriots. This week, they're going to see a mix. You know, Denver plays a lot of zone. I think they're about 50-50 right now, and by the end of the year, I think they'll probably be more zone than man, and they have a really good secondary. I mean, so they're not just playing nobodies out there. It's not just all scheme. It's talent, too. Their secondary, you know, Simmons is one of the best safeties in the league, and they have Patrick Surtain at corner. You know, they have, you know, Kareem Jackson, another good safety. You know, they're deep at corner. They have Fuller at corner. So it's a very good, and they play pass cover. I've had people in the league, like veteran scouts, tell me that it's hard to tell what Denver's doing on defense, even when you're rewatching the film and you can slow it down and rewind it. Some of the coverages are so sophisticated that even trained eyes have a problem seeing it on tape. Imagine a rookie quarterback in real time. Mm. So he's going to see some stuff that he's never seen before. He's going to have to adjust, and that's why I get back to the running game. They got to be able to run the ball. Otherwise, it's going to be a long day.
You know, you talk about that Denver defense, and you're fortunate that Bradley Chubb isn't going to play. But Von Miller against Morgan Moses, what happens there, Rich?
Yeah, that's a tough one, and they're actually moving Von Miller around a little bit. Usually he would be over the right tackle, which in this case is Morgan Moses. I think they've been using him, flipping him around. So, hey, look, we talked to John Benton, the offensive line coach, during the week, and he said, you know, on third down, my eyes are going to be looking at Von Miller. And so the Jets have to figure out a way to block him. And, you know, the pass protection got better against New England. It was certainly better than it was against Carolina, which was just almost a jailbreak. But, you know, they're going to have to be mindful of Von, and like you alluded to earlier, you know, just different fronts, different exotic pressures that he probably hasn't seen before.
What about the secondary? I mean, you know, again, as I mentioned, no Bradley Chubb on defense. On offense, no Jerry Jeudy, but Courtland Sutton stepped up last week. 12 targets, 9 receptions, 159 yards. You've got Tim Patrick. You've got K.J. Hamler. You've got Noah Fant, who plays almost 80% of their snaps. How does this Jets secondary and this defense go up against Teddy Bridgewater? I know no bells and whistles, but dude is top in the NFL when it comes to completion percentage and the weapons that he's working with.
Yeah, the thing that Teddy's doing now that he's never done before, he's actually pushing the ball downfield. He used to be known as a dink and dunk passer, but this year I think he's among the lead. In fact, I know he's among the leaders in average air yards per attempt. His guy looking downfield is Courtland Sutton. You know, Sutton, I believe, is averaging about 20 air yards per target, which is like a lot. So he's obviously looking for him. They've had success hooking up downfield. So it's a different kind of Teddy Bridgewater, a more aggressive offense, and a challenge for these young corners. I think these young corners have actually done a pretty good job for the Jets. You know, they haven't been really burned too badly. Like the one long one they gave up in week one against Carolina, Robbie Anderson hit him for 50-something. But that was on the safety. And so the corners have held up. But this is a little bit stiffer challenge than they've faced the first couple of weeks.
Rich, before we let you go, let's talk about Robert Saleh, right? Like, comes in first year. I know I was expecting growing pains. I want to assume they know this team better than us. They were expecting growing pains. What was he like this week? And you know, how is he rallying these? Because I do believe they're going to go 0-3. I do believe this very well has the potential to be another ugly game. You know, how is Robert Saleh keeping everybody focused, keeping everybody positive when, again, the potential of starting 0-3 this season?
Yeah, he's probably one of the most upbeat guys I've been around. You know, you listen to him and you almost think that they're 2-0 instead of 0-2. And so, and I agree with you. I think the Broncos will win the game. I have them winning by a couple of touchdowns. And so the Jets could be looking at 0-3 for the third straight year, which, of course, is not all on Saleh. He's only responsible for this year. But I don't sense any woe-is-me attitude around the players. It's pretty upbeat. I think they're trying to build on the things they did well last week, which was, you know, running the ball, protecting better, things like that. You know, on defense, their defense played well last week, considering their quarterback threw it away 4 times. You know, to only give up 25 points, that's pretty good. That could have been a 40-point game. So I think that those are the little things, you know, the baby steps. How many times have we heard that phrase, you know, just taking baby steps? So what the Jets have to do is try to figure out a way to come up with a formula to play a complete, sound, complementary football game, which they clearly have not done so far, and what they will have to do to upset Denver.
Rich, always great having you on. Thank you so much for spending some time with us this morning. Really do appreciate it. Enjoy the game later on this afternoon.
Always my pleasure, Anita. Have a good Sunday.
New York Game Day with Mike Tannenbaum, Matthias Kiwanuka, and Anita Marks. These are Anita's Locks of the Week. And we're not talking about her long blonde hair.
No, we're certainly not. Welcome back. It is New York Game Day. Anita Marks with you. It's time for my Locks of the Week, and we've got a very special guest who's joining us, Aaron Schatz. He's been in the business for quite a while, footballoutsiders.com. Check him out. Very good at what he does, so I thought, you know, why not? Why not bring somebody on, and, you know, we could chat it up before I give you my three Locks of the Week. So, Aaron, first and foremost, welcome in, man. How are you?
I'm good. I'm enjoying the season so far. There's been a lot of really good football. So, you have to wait through the whole offseason for the good stuff. But we finally have gotten to the good stuff.
I love it. All right, let's dive right into it. So there are a lot of dogs this week that I do like, and I'm going to list them. And maybe there's one or two that you're like, yeah, Anita, I love that one. And if there is, I want to hear it from you. Washington, I got them at +9, by the way, when the line first came out. It's now down to +7. Cincinnati +3. The Rams +1.5. In fact, I like the Rams to win outright. I like them on the money line. Green Bay +3.5. Those are my, and I'm leaning towards Philadelphia, but I'm probably not going to push that button. I'll probably use them in a teaser. I'll get into those two-team six-point teasers that I love this week as well. But out of those teams that I just, all those dogs that I just listed for you, any of them stand out that you're like, yeah, I'm on that too?
Oh, I'm totally on Washington, absolutely. And getting it at 9, congratulations, because that line has absolutely moved since then.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I still like it at 7. The big deal there is, Taylor Heinicke has just proven that he's better than the average run-of-the-mill backup, and the drop from Fitzpatrick to Heinicke, if there even is a drop, seems to be a small one. So as much as I do like the Buffalo Bills, I do like Washington +7 there. I also think of the ones that you named. I like Green Bay, 3.5. That extra half point is just a really nice hook to have. I'm on Tampa rather than the Rams. So I think Tampa is more likely to win that game. So that's one I'm not in favor of. And Cincinnati-Pittsburgh, I think, is pretty much a wash.
Interesting. So, if would you recommend somebody buy the hook to +3.5?
Maybe, but I'd rather just stay away from that game, honestly, given that okay. I don't really know what the health situation is with Roethlisberger there.
I know. Dude should have just retired. I thought, listen, him and Pouncey had this pack. When one retired, the other one was going to, you know, sail off in the sunset with him. I don't understand why he came back, but to each their own. There are some over and unders that I like this week. I'm going to throw them out to you. Bills, Washington, over 45.5. The Bucks, Rams, over 55.5. The Cards and Jags, over 52. And the Colts, Titans, under 48. Any of those tickle your fancy, Aaron?
I think I like the Colts Titans under 48. My over-under that I really like this week is Patriots Saints, even though the over-under is very low at, I believe, 43 or 42. I still like that to go under. Those teams are very defensive-focused now, and they've also been playing at a slow pace. Slow pace equals fewer points.
Yeah, but that's why I like the Colts and the Titans, two of the slowest paced teams. And with the question about Carson Wentz, will he go, will he not? Again, I really like that under in the Colts-Titans game. All right, and last but not least, I want to throw out some, I've really done well the last 2 weeks, Aaron, with two-team six-point teasers, okay? And there's quite a few that I really like. Arizona -1.5 against the Jags. Cincinnati teeing them up to +9 against Pittsburgh. Washington up to +13 against the Bills. The Ravens -2.5 against Detroit. Denver -4.5 against the Jets. The Rams teeing them up to +7, +7.5 in some places. And the Green Bay Packers +9. Give me two of those that you really like that stand out to you.
Well, I'll give you one of those and one of my own. The one of those that I really like is Green Bay plus 9.5. I definitely think that game can be very close between San Francisco and Green Bay, especially since San Francisco does like to run so much. And the other one I like is the Kansas City Chiefs minus 0.5 instead of 6.5. I have been on the belief that the Chargers are a bit overrated, and the problem with the Chiefs is not winning games usually, it's covering games usually. So I like them because if you tease them 6 points, you're only asking them to win, not to cover.
You're not worried about the defense that everyone is anticipating the Chargers to come with? It's kind of like their staff has the magic formula of what it takes, eliminate explosive plays when you go up against Patrick Mahomes.
I mean, that's the defense that everyone tries to play against Patrick Mahomes now, so I don't see the Chargers being that much different. And I know middle of the week, Bosa and Derwin James didn't practice one day, so I don't know what their situation is. And I think that what Staley can do to this defense is a little overrated. They just don't have the horses. What the Chiefs really need to do is put the ball on the ground because the Chargers can't stop the run. In particular, Jerry Tillery has just been really struggling against the run. And if they're going to play that too deep stuff, you can run against them.
It's interesting. You need those horses in your stable in order to play the caliber of defense that you need to stop the Kansas City Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes. That's for sure. I can't wait to watch that game. My favorite game though is the Rams and the Tampa Bay Bucks. That's probably my favorite game to watch.
Game of the week.
That is the game of the week, right? Again, before we get to my locks of the week, let's talk about some player prop bets out there. So I'm going to brag. On Daily Wager, in 2 weeks, I'm 51-26 with my picks in our column. But a big reason, and people are like, 51? You're making those that? Well, yeah, because I'm not only am I making plays on games, but also like I'm making a lot of plays in regard to prop bets. So and there are a number that I really 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 like this week. Is there one prop bet out there that has caught your eye that you're in love with this week, Aaron?
Russell Wilson over 1.5 passing touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the odds on
against,
this aren't good.
Against Minnesota. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, plus 200 where I saw. But we, in our simulations, Wilson hits this like 85% of the time or something, which means plus 200 is still like money in the bank. Seahawks are third in our passing DVOA rating. Vikings 22nd against the pass. Rashad Breeland had trouble with A.J. Green last week. How is he going to cover Tyler Lockett or D.K. Metcalf?
I hear you. So my two prop bets in that game, I've got Russell Wilson over 282.5 passing yards, and I'm keen in on Tyler Lockett as well. That Breeland matchup, no bueno. So I got Lockett over 73.5 receiving yards. So those are my
really
two prop bets. Those are two my okay.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna tee up for you my favorite prop bet, and it's Justin Fields. That Bears offensive line is so bad. He's gonna be running for his life. And also, I like the way. Listen, I do believe Cleveland's gonna win. Obviously, we're talking prop bets, has nothing to do with winning losses. However, he's able to create more time for himself. And I don't think, I think Robinson's going to get his. I love Mooney. I've got over receptions and over yards on Mooney. But again, my favorite bet is Justin Fields over 207.5 passing yards and over 266.5, both passing and rushing yards. It's my favorite prop bet. I'm curious to get your thoughts.
I think this game is going to be closer than you think it's going to be, and I think that the Browns' defense is overrated, so I like your picks.
Oh, that's nice. Okay, I was sitting on the edge of my seat. Again, Aaron Schatz joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. Okay, with all that said, I'm going to give our listeners so each and every week on our show, I give my listeners my three locks of the week. So and a number of them are teasers. So I'm going, my first one is the Browns minus 1 and the Tennessee Titans under 54. That's my first, there you go, my lock of the week. That's my first two-team six-point teaser. And then, again, I'm going to throw in, I really like the Fields So your thoughts on my first lock of the week?
Well, like I said, I'm further down on the Browns than other people are, but I do think they should be favored to win this game. So teasing that from 7-1 does make sense to me. And with Indianapolis, who knows what the quarterback situation is going to be. That under sounds pretty good, too.
Lock number two, again, another two-team six-point teaser. Arizona minus 1.5 against the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Chargers in Kansas City over 48.5. Aaron?
Yeah, I like that one, too. I do. I think Kansas City, I think the Chargers' defense is not as good as people think. We know that the Chiefs' defense is not very good. We know that these offenses are very good, so that over makes sense. And, yes, Jacksonville is a mess right now. Urban Meyer looks like he wants out. Arizona, absolutely, yes.
And last but not least, my last lock of the week is a team total over Seattle, 27.5 against the Vikings. Aaron?
Well, we talked about Rashad Breeland and the problems that he had last week covering A.J. Green, and we know that they've got some pass rush issues in Minnesota, too. So, I mean, I find myself agreeing with you on these picks. I wish I could, like, that's... you know, be controversial and tell you you're absolutely wrong on one of them. But, no, I like these picks. I like them.
Aaron, I love that you like my picks. Are you kidding me? Like, you know, I know how great you are in this business and you know, your success rate and all that good stuff. So just it makes me good that you're in agreement with me for my three locks of the week. Aaron, thank you so much. Again, before we let you go, why don't you let our listeners know where can they find you? What's your social media, you know, handle? All that good stuff.
Well, on Twitter, you find me at FO_ASHOT. That's spelled ASHOT. footballoutsiders.com. Be sure to check out a trial subscription to FO Plus, where you get our fantasy projections and our fantasy football tools and our picks against the spread, all that good stuff. footballoutsiders.com.
New York Game Day with Mike Tannenbaum, Matthias Kiwanuka, and Anita Marks.
The party gets bigger. Mike Tannenbaum joins us here on 98.7 ESPN. Mike, welcome in. Good morning. How you doing?
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
We're great.
Good,
we're great.
Good morning.
Yeah, excited to have you on. Let's start first and foremost with the Giants and the Falcons. Kiwi and I have been talking about it for a good portion of the show today. We would like to get your thoughts, your opinion on this matchup. Game script. Everyone that I talk to who covers the Giants or works for the Giants says, man, if we can't beat the Falcons and vice versa, everybody who works or covers the Falcons says, well, if the Falcons can't beat the Giants, curious, how do you see this game playing out, Mike?
Yeah, I think this is a good matchup for the Giants. Be nice to get a nice, you know, home win. I think this is an opponent that really matches up well for them. You know, Atlanta's really struggled stopping the run, so I wouldn't be surprised if all week we talked about, boy, you know, Saquon Barkley got back on track, really established himself. And some of the things that Daniel Jones is doing really well is, you know, through ESPN, we have access to next-gen stats. And this is really amazing. He's this statistic, I think, paints a really interesting picture. His expected completion percentage is 60.8%, which is the lowest in the league, meaning he's trying very difficult passes, but he's actually completing them at a 63.8%. So he's actually exceeding expectations as it relates to getting the ball down the field, throwing the ball into tight windows. You know, the big question is going to be, again, pass protection. I don't think Atlanta's front seven is going to test this offensive line, but obviously with Gates' injury, that to me is going to be something, maybe not for today, guys, but something that the Giants are going to have to keep improving upon.
There is definitely a stat for everything out there, I guess. That's awesome. I like that. I like that take. Let me ask you this. How big of an impact do you think Ingram's going to have on the game this week?
Well, he should have, you know, a significant one. It's interesting because I think when you look at what the Giants can do or should be able to do, I think they could their offense, to me, Kiwi, they can attack it a number of different ways. So, you know, we'll see. Again, I would love for them to come out and establish the run to me. That would be priority one if I was the Giants.
You know, in regard to what's going on with Atlanta, you know, Russell Gage is going to be out. One of their top corners, AJ Terrell's out. TJ Green is in. You know, I think it's really interesting the way that they're utilizing Cordarrelle Patterson, right? Like kind of this hybrid role. What do you expect the Atlanta Falcons are going to, like, are you, game script wise, Mike, are you expecting a close game? Are you expecting a blowout? Like, how do you see this game playing out?
Yeah, well, going back to Kiwi's point about Ingram, like, I think they'll be able to run the ball. I also think, like, Shepard has been very underrated so far. So, given the injuries that Atlanta has in Canley, they're not great in the secondary anyway. There's all sorts of matchups, I think, for the Giants to exploit. On the other side of the ball, I think what's really important is I'd like to see the Giants get their pass rush going. Uh-huh. I've been a little candidly surprised that it hasn't been better. And Kiwi, you know this. When you can't rush the passer, it's hard to play good third down defense. It's mm-hmm. hard to create turnovers. And to me, Leonard Williams, he has to play better. It's early, but I don't think he's played particularly well so far. Azeez Ojulari, somebody I love coming out of Georgia, their second-round pick. I thought he had the ability to go forward and backwards. I'd love to see some of those guys get going because the more pressure they can bring, I think it'll just make it easier for their secondary, which on paper, again, is much improved over a year ago.
That was something that I pointed out, you know, early in the show, is that there needs to be a guy. You know, somebody's got to stand up and emerge from this group up front, you know, defensive line and linebacker, you know, to say, you know, I'm getting pressure. The guys in the back end, they can only cover for so long. You know, like if you're playing man or you're playing zone, you know, zone's great, but like you got to play some man at times. They can only cover for so long. So at a certain point up front, you got to take it on yourselves. You know, if the quarterback is holding on to the ball, even if he's escaping the pocket, you know, if the quarterback's holding on to the ball for, you know, more time than he should, like, then that's not on the DBs. That's not on the secondary. That's on the front, you know? So what do you suggest? Do we blitz them? Do we stay with the four-man rush? Like, how do you think we get there?
Yeah, I'd blitz. I mean, when you look at all the resources that the Giants put on the back end, I would certainly, if we're not getting there with four, I would certainly, Patrick Graham, if I was about, I'd really start thinking about sending more. I mean, that's why you signed Adoree Jackson. Mm-hmm. James Bradbury has played well. Those are guys that should be able to play man-to-man, get off the field, especially given, you know, who their opponent is today. You know, Kyle Pitts, we all hope and believe that he'll be, you know, a great player, probably transformational at the tight end position. But when you really look at, you know, what they have and some of their injuries, I think this is a game, Kiwi, in my opinion, and Anita, that if they send more than Atlanta could block, they should be able to hold up on the back end.
Guys, let's take a look at some of the other teams playing today, and really Monday night in the NFC East. As we know, where the division stands right now, Washington 1-1. We're going to get into that as they take on the Bills today. The Eagles 1-1, Dallas 1-1, and the Giants 0-2. We're all hoping that at the end of today, the Giants will be 1-2. Dallas, in my opinion, should be 0-2. I think they should have lost to the Chargers nonetheless, but they're going up against the Eagles. And Kiwi, I'd like to start with you here. The Dallas Cowboys are missing seven guys on their front seven and some big name players as well. Talk about Parsons and what his role as a rookie has been to this defense and how important it's going to be. Keep in mind, this is the first game that the Dallas Cowboys will face a quarterback who also has the threat of rushing the football. Their first two quarterbacks were Tom Brady and Justin Herbert, who are more pocket passers. So your thoughts on that Monday night game and how that's going to affect the NFC East?
Yeah, I mean, you asked me to talk about Parsons. I mean, there's not enough that can be said about his approach to the game. I think the first thing you look at, the kid runs a 4.39. You know, when you're talking about lining up and trying to get to the quarterback, like, one of the main things that you need is speed. Now, obviously, he's young. I love the fact that he's confident. He's out there. He called himself the Terminator, and he's got, you know, Hurts on his hit list. All that stuff is good. But, you know, at the end of the day, he's a linebacker. He moved to defensive line when they asked him to, which I think that's the easier of the moves. If you're going from defensive end to linebacker like I did, like, that's more difficult because there's so many more nuances of the game that you have to understand and pick up when you're talking about coverages. That being said, going from linebacker to defensive end, it's not an easy task. He looks very comfortable with his hand in the ground, you know, and that's something that usually takes linebackers a lot of time to perfect. And when I say he looks comfortable, it's not just, you know, in the pass rush. You know, I see him, you know, against the zone, he's setting the edge, you know, he's firing off the ball, he's got his offensive tackle stood up, and there's no, you know, there, he's set an edge to the defense. So I think, you know, he's a phenomenal player. He's a talent. Where I start to, you know, cringe a little bit is, you know, they're asking him to do so many different things out there on the field. And in my opinion, playing out of position in the NFL is the quickest way to the training room. You know, you train specific muscle groups on your body to do specific things. And, you know, he could find himself in an awkward position and pull some or tear some. So I think for him and for obviously for the rest of them, you know, staying healthy is the key. But for as far as what he's brought to the table right now, I mean, he's leading the league in pressures. You know, if those things start getting converted to sacks, it's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, and you know, just to add to that, if we go back a week ago, you know, Parsons was moved because of injuries and suspensions to defensive end, and that put Van Der Esch, Jalen Smith, you know, on the field. They both played really well against the Chargers, and that created some opportunities on the back end where Kazee had an interception, Diggs had an interception. So I thought moving Parsons to defensive end guys really impacted the defense for the Cowboys at all three levels.
Mike, let's pick up there and stay in the NFC East. And that's, you know, the Washington football team going up against the Buffalo Bills. Now, Washington, their defense performing below expectation, and the Bills, their offense performing below expectation, especially Josh Allen. We had big expectations for him this year. Listen, the Bills, I'm coming clean.
We are you. Full, you had
me,
big expectations.
Me. I mean, a lot of people had big expectations.
No,
you know what I mean? I mean, but in full transparency, for me, Bills are my Super Bowl pick. So, but I'm curious to hear from you, Mike. What have you seen on both sides here? What's wrong with Washington defense, and what's wrong with Josh Allen in the Buffalo Bills offense?
Yeah. You know, candidly, I'm surprised about Washington's defense because I thought it was going to be very good. So I'm a little surprised by that. I think they just need a little bit more time. But, you know, when you talk about Montez Sweat and Chase Young, it's hard to think that there's a better bookend defensive end. You know, maybe Chubb and Miller when they're healthy in Denver. But outside of that, you know, not many guys. So I think they're going to be okay. And then as it relates to both of those offense, you know, I've watched Josh Allen very carefully. First of all, you go back to opening day, guys. You know, there was two consequential plays that impacted big, big games. And they were both drop punts. You know, you go back to the Chief Brown game and you go back to the Steeler Bill game. The outcome of those games, to me, were impacted by a punt. So even though Josh Allen hasn't been perfect, they should be 2-0. And, you know, Miami's a good defensive team. I think he's forced it a little bit. I think sometimes the ball will sail on him. We saw that at Wyoming. And candidly, that's why he wasn't the first pick in the draft. I was with Miami, and, you know, we love Baker Mayfield. We did like Josh Allen, but, you know, there was a reason Baker went first. You know, he was so accurate with the ball. So I think with Josh, it got better last year. I thought Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator, did a great job, and I expected to get better. But, boy, you know, it's funny, Anita, like one of the key matchups for me today that I'm so fascinated by, ironically, is on the other side of the ball, which is I can't wait to see Terry McLaurin and Tre'Davious White be matched up head-to-head because I think those are – two of the better young players in our league.
Kiwi, let's go back to you in regard to the Chargers and the Kansas City Chiefs. You know, as we know, the way that you want to, because you can't stop Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, but one of the ways that you could contain them is by eliminating the explosive passing plays of 20 yards or more. And I know a lot of teams try to implement that, but you've got to have the horses in your stable in order to execute. On the opposite side, you've got some defensive players, specifically on the defensive line, Clark, who's going to be out. And that's, I think, Kansas City is going to take a big hit because Justin Herbert has picked up where he left off. Your thoughts on this Chargers-Kansas City game? I think a lot of points are going to be scored here today because there's such question marks in regard to both defenses. Agree or disagree?
I agree. I mean, I'm looking at a shootout. I mean, when you think about the things that Patrick Mahomes has done, you know, he's able to, you know, get the ball down the field, but he also escapes the pocket a lot, and he's very accurate outside of the pocket, and that's been an issue for the Chargers. I don't see either defense, you know, containing too much. I think, you know, there's going to be a lot of points on the board.
Mike, any thoughts about the Chargers-Kansas City game? Two excellent quarterbacks. I can't wait to see this one.
Yeah, this could be who has the ball last. And again, you know, individual matchups, guys, like this could be, like, to me, two of the future, like, bright stars in the game is Derwin James. When healthy, he's an excellent player for the Chargers. And, you know, if he's going to be matched up against Travis Kelce, arguably the best tight end in the league, I think that's a matchup within a matchup. But, you know, Kansas City's really struggled defensively, and the Chargers can move the ball. So this should be a very, very high-scoring game. And if I'm Andy Reid, I'm slightly concerned about my defense just because, look, you've got against Cleveland and Baltimore, two teams are explosive. But if you remember, Baltimore is really undermanned. Now, We saw why Lamar Jackson's a league MVP, but that is a little bit of a concern if I'm Andy Reid.
And last but not least, guys, one more game I want to tee up for you guys is the Bucs and the Rams. I can't wait for this one. To me, this is the best game. You know, and Mike, I want to go back to you here because I don't know about you guys, but I've heard more about the Bucs-Patriots game next week than I have about this game this week. On top of the fact that we all know, Kiwi, and I'd love for you to comment on this as well. And you know, the way to get to Tom Brady, you know him better than most, is through the interior of the line, and that's where one of the best, if not best, defensive linemen is going to come after Tom Brady, and that's Aaron Donald. Last time he faced the Rams, 54% completion percentage, 2 interceptions, 0-6 for passes, 20 yards or more. So first things first, Mike, I want to start with you. You know, are you getting the same sense that I am, that this Bucs team is paying more attention to Tom Brady taking it to the Patriots next week than they are right now in LA?
Well, I think it's two different audiences. Do I think the media is? Yeah, 1,000%. Especially when Alex Guerrero comes out and talks to the Boston Herald about his opinion of Bill Belichick. What's interesting about that, and we talked about it on the Michael Kay Show the other day, which is, you know, Alex Guerrero can't go to the bathroom without getting approval from Tom Brady. So we know those comments, which were on the record, were certainly approved by Tom Brady, which is, to me, surprising. But knowing how incredibly focused amongst his many superpowers Tom Brady is, I just don't think that he's going to look past the Rams. The Rams are a really good team. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, I had the great fortune of working for Coach Belichick a couple times. And even though he's not on the Buccaneer staff, you know, some of his philosophy certainly went down with Tom Brady, which is, if we're going to lose to a team, guys, we're going to lose left-handed, meaning we're not going to let Aaron Donald beat us. Like, we may lose because A'shaun Robinson makes a play or somebody else in the front seven for the Rams does. And to me, they'll double or triple team Aaron Donald literally on every play.
I agree. I think it's not something that they're going to overlook. There is something about Tom Brady and the preparation that he puts in and the culture that, you know, I believe that it was created in concert with Bill Belichick, but he has, you know, accepted it. He's understood it. He's contributed to it. And now he's taken it down to Tampa Bay. They are prepared. They understand what their weaknesses are as much as what their strengths are. So I don't see, you know, one individual beating them. The way that we got pressure, the way that we beat them was by taking advantage of matchups up and down the line. It wasn't just one person or one individual. And I think that's the concept that has to be taken if you're talking about trying to get Tom Brady. When we would get into the film study, you know, we would watch, you know, at the end of the week, we'd watch every single pressure and sack of the quarterback that we're going against. Now, we're playing, you know, Tom Brady in a Super Bowl, and his clip was one of the shortest of the year that we had seen. You know, he did not get touched. You know, he wasn't harassed in the pocket. And so you still see that as he's dropping back. He has time. He has, you know, his vision is always down the field. They're not making him move. If they can get to him, if they can move him off of his spot, yeah, he might have a rough day. But I don't think at this point in his career, at this stage, and the way that he's playing, I just don't think it's smart to go against Tom Brady.
New York Game Day with Mike Tannenbaum, Matthias Kiwanuka, and Anita Marks.
Mike Tannenbaum joining us. And Mike, really curious. We heard Kiwi shared with us when we started the show, you know, some really, really great insight stories on what it's like being Eli Manning's teammate. Really curious to get your thoughts on the inside of, you know, how everything went down and what was being discussed and communicated with the whole draft process with, of course, Eli and the Chargers and the Giants. Kind of share that story with us.
Yeah, you know, we were lucky enough to have Ernie Accorsi on. We had a pre-draft special on ESPN New York, and he went into great detail about the whole story, which is really like legendary when you think about how, you know, two different teams drafted different quarterbacks, and the fact that the trade actually wound up happening is really remarkable. It'd be like, you know, Cleveland drafting Josh Allen and Buffalo drafting Baker Mayfield, and after those selections are made, Anita, they actually switch teams. So credit to Ernie Accorsi, John Mara, that they hung in there. You know, they knew who they wanted all along. Obviously, it was Eli. And obviously the rest is history. There was so much that went into it, though, just in terms of, like, how much they would give up, how many picks. Ernie was comfortable giving up to A.J. Smith, the then general manager of the then San Diego Chargers, and he was comfortable walking away. And I can tell you, you know, making multiple trades over 20-plus years, that's really what it comes down to, which is who is comfortable walking away. And where I give Ernie so much credit, guys, is this. It's Eli Manning. It's someone that you have conviction to be your quarterback for the next 10 years. But he said, look, you know, they had talked about him, John Mara, the whole organization, and what you saw them trade was really like their last best offer. And but for that, you know, guys, like history truly would have been different.
Let me ask you that. As a front office guy, do you look back at the trades? I mean, I'm sure you look back and you try to figure out like how you can get better. But do you look back at decisions that you've made and analyze it the same way that the fans do?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kiwi, like, you know, for me, it's always about what you could do to give up to improve your team and making sure that you stay within reason, like trading up for Mark Sanchez, for example. Like, we had a pretty good sense of what we would do. You know, there was three quarterbacks going in the first round that year, Josh Freeman, him, and Matthew Stafford. You know, we took a run at Stafford within reason, knowing that would be unrealistic. And we felt really good about Sanchez through the pre-draft process. So we had a sense of what we were going to do. And look, you're going to get criticized, you know, one way or the other. But, you know, if you feel like you have conviction on a guy, especially someone that you think could take you where you go, you can't worry about the criticism. Likewise, like when we traded for Favre, we had a good, not great quarterback in Chad Pennington, but one that was very popular. And again, we knew we would get some criticism because we were moving on from Chad Pennington. But at the time, we just felt like for us to compete with New England and Tom Brady, you know, Brett Favre just gave us a better chance to win.
So you basically just make the best decision you can at the time with the information that you have and move on. I mean, I get – so is there a difference between drafting a young quarterback? Because you don't have as much information on a young guy coming out of a college or as you do when you're trading for a player, especially a guy like Brett Favre. Like, how different is it when you're talking about, you know, analyzing a player, putting a value on a player, what you would give up in a draft as opposed to somebody you're trading for who's already been in the league?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, if Coach Parcells was part of this discussion, he would just talk about, you know, going back, you want them to have 30 career starts if possible in college. And that's changed so much. And, you know, Sanchez only started 14. So you make a great point, Kiwi, which is the unknown of a guy that's going from college to pro with a very limited sample set, especially in Mark's case. We felt really good about it, but there was definitely some, you know, question marks because there was a small sample. But when you're looking for a quarterback, and in our case, when we had hired Rex Ryan and we wanted to get a young quarterback, there's just not a ton of options. So there's going to be a leap of faith. And I think one of the things that was a bedrock principle for me and still is candidly, be it running a team or a business, whatever it may be, is, you know, the tape sets the floor, character sets the ceiling, and someone's true character in life, in my opinion, is how you treat people that can help you, the waiter, the waitress, the bus driver. And our best selections at the Jets, the DeBrickashaw Fergusons, the Mangolds, the Darrell Revises, like the common thread was, yeah, they were great players, but they were even better people and better teammates, and I think that's so important.
I agree 100% with that, and I think that had a lot to do with the culture that was established, you know, when I was playing for the Giants. I mean, the guys who were coming in and out of that locker room were high character guys, quality guys, and that is something that you look to, not just, you know, when you're picking a team, but like, you know, Anita, we say, like, if you're dating somebody, like, how do they treat the wait staff? Like, you know, how do they treat the people, like you said, who they don't perceive them being able to do anything for them? You know, that's interesting. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Again, Mike Tannenbaum, Matthias Kiwanuka, you know, one last thing I'd like for you to comment on, and we'll come back with our predictions and we'll end the show strong. And that is, you know, Eli Manning will forever be compared to Ben Roethlisberger and Philip Rivers. And I think we're all, three of us, I would imagine, are all in agreement that, like, you know, it takes a certain unique individual in personality to play here in New York City. And I just don't think either of those, you could look at stats and say, you know, Eli Manning's not a first-time Hall of Fame, you know, what, everybody each their own, it's your own opinion. Like, I don't believe Ben Roethlisberger and Philip Rivers would have as much success here in New York as Eli Manning did. I'm curious to get both your opinions on that. Mike, let's start with you.
Yeah, you bring up a really interesting point. I got to take it a step further, Anita. And if we had Archie Manning on right now, you know, Archie Manning's the godfather of the Manning family, and you know they're going into their third generation because his third son Cooper has a son, Arch, who's going to be the number one recruit out of a high school in New Orleans called Isidore Newman, and he's going to be a great player. So literally we're on to the third generation. But what's so interesting is Archie Manning would tell you that Eli Manning had the better disposition for New York than Peyton. Mm. And, you know, Peyton could be really funny and engaging, but let's face it, like, and Kiwi, you could certainly relate to this as well. Like, New York's not for everybody. Now, I was born in New York, raised in the Northeast. I love it. I kind of thrive on it. But it is times 10 in New York, meaning, like, when it's good mm-hmm. times 10. And you could drive around town, guys, and still see, you know, billboards of Derek Jeter and Bill Parcells and Phil Sims and, you know, Boomer Esiason was a great player. But when it's bad times 10. And I think Eli's disposition is better suited for the New York market than Peyton's would have been.
I agree. And you hit some great points. I think we talked about Eli earlier in the show, and we talked about his demeanor and how now on his show, he's able to come out a little bit. He's able to show a little bit more of his personality that we all inside the locker room knew. But, you know, when you're facing that New York media and you're facing that harsh criticism, I think it's better suited for somebody who can conceal their emotions, who doesn't allow everybody to know exactly how they're feeling at all times, because New York is undefeated. Tuck and I and OC came and we spoke to the team this offseason, and that was one thing I believe Tuck brought up, is like, yo, that city right there, you know, you're pointing across with, is undefeated. If you want to go out there, you want to battle New York, and you want to fight with everybody in New York on Twitter or, you know, on social media, you're not going to win. You know, it's more about controlling yourself. Like I said, being mindful, you know, allowing those thoughts to come in on here and out the other, and not react to every little thing. I think Eli did that perfectly while he was here, and that attributed to a lot of his success.
Hey, Anita, one thing I just want to add to this conversation, which is so interesting, and I love what Kiwi just said, is, you know, if we can interject, you know, Tom Brady compared to Tom Brady. And what I mean by that is, you know, Tom Brady for the first part of his career worked for Coach Belichick, and, you know, there's a certain way things are going to be done there and said there. But clearly, you know, now I'm sure there's a lot of reasons why Tom Brady wanted to relocate to Florida, where there are no taxes and weather and, you know, personal, whatever it may be. But clearly, you know, we're seeing a different Tom Brady, you know, one that's on social media, one that's very outspoken about league rules that he doesn't like the numbering issue. And candidly, it's a different Tom Brady. So I think part of it too is like where you are in your career. Like, are you in the formative years of your career, or do you feel like you have a bigger platform? You know, you could take Michael Strahan. Michael Strahan was a somewhat under the radar second round pick, was a good pass rusher early in his career. And obviously he's evolved into, you know, one of the biggest national broadcasters there are, you know, on multi-platforms. And I think sometimes it just takes players time to evolve and change. And certainly to me, like, you look at someone like Eli, over time, he was, you got to see a little bit more of his personality.
New York Game Day with Mike Tannenbaum, Matthias Kiwanuka, and Anita Marks.